I'm John Glover. I was Lionel Luther on Smallville, and I will always, always hold on to Smallville. And I hope you all do too.
Welcome to Always Holding Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of The Young Superman Show, that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined this week by Mr. Anthony Polonick. What's up, Anthony?
Hey there, Zach. I'm doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, cool, man. Nice to finally podcast with you because we got connected through the internet, through some mutual Twitter friends, and T. Hamill, I believe it was, who suggested you be on the podcast. Is that correct?
Yes.
If I'm right about that?
Yes, yes. I believe so. T. Hamill is a someone I've known on the internet for quite some time, and I really don't know if a lot of your listeners will be familiar with me, but I've had a few connections with a lot of people online. If you're ever familiar with somebody from Sam's channel, he does movie reviews, likes to talk a lot about Spider-Man. I've done a lot of different stuff with him over the years, So I've had, you know, a few connections here and there. So you may have heard of me, maybe not.
No, I definitely have, because I Sam's channel. I'm a fan of Sam's channel, his takes on things, and then also way back in the day, you did some stuff with Shades at Night. At least that was the name of the YouTube channel. I really enjoyed the What Did We Do YouTube videos y'all did. Those were just absurd and very. And are those even on the internet anymore?
Yeah. So What Did We Do was all Kirk. Kirk is Shades at Night, for those of you who don't know.
Okay.
And yeah, that was inspired by another one of our friends, just general sort of like YouTube poop style edits. And those specifically are not in his channel. If you look hard enough, you may find them re-uploaded by other people. But I mean, those are quite old at this point. But yeah, it's, I guess, what Zach was alluding to. I used to have a podcast with my friend Kirk, aka Shades at Night. It was called the Solomon Grundy Podcast, where we talked about.
Yes, I listened to that.
We talked about movie news and comic book news, and it was essentially just sort of a pop culture nerd podcast, where it was a weekly kind of recap of everything, and then. This is while we were still watching the shows, we would do recaps of Arrow and Flash. So honestly, very similar to the sort of setup where you have, where you go through episode to episode discussing the plot and everything like that. We reviewed Arrow and Flash, and it was a very different time. You know, that's nearly a decade ago at this point, it feels. Yeah, you know, we still do projects here and there, and we still stay in touch. So you can still find new content from us. But yeah, like you said, when you... I'd asked, like, are you the guy from the Solomon Grundy podcast? It was a weird moment for me, because that's like someone being like, hey, did you go to this high school? It's like, well that's somewhere in my past that I don't go anymore. Like,
blast from the past.
Very weird moment.
are those online as well? Or are they also erased from existence?
Those got caught up in the snap. Are gone. We woke up one day and our YouTube channel was non-existent. I'm not entirely sure why. It could be sort of an internet troll thing. Yeah, it's long story. But either way, we had a...
Gotcha.
I guess to explain, people are probably listening to this wondering why it was called the Solomon Grundy. that's sort of a story within itself. I guess to make it quick and simple, because we want to get into the episode that we're going to be discussing here. Arrow, obviously, back in the day. You know, before shows nowadays where you could just have bright and colorful characters and have everybody that you want... They would make just references to things. You know, it'd be like, oh, we throw in an author here, we throw in artist here, character here. And at the time, Oliver Queen's sort of like cover-up party, you know, club didn't have a name yet. It was just called The Club. And so we were like, what if they just made it really obvious with the reference? You know, what if they called it, you know, something really, really silly? We eventually reached the point of like, well, they just called it the Solomon Grundy, because Arrow's never going to actually do Solomon Grundy, even though they eventually kind of did, kind of.
Yeah.
But we were just, it's just the ridiculousness of like, what if they named a bar just like the most obvious over your head comic book reference? And then we started a podcast. We had another friend named Cody suggest just call it that, because that's kind of your, what you guys are known for, that bit. And so we had the most, you know, if because people see that name and they don't know what it's about. So for marketing purposes, not the best thing. But for like inside jokes, for the people we were making it for, hilarious. You had to be there.
Absolutely. But that's what it's all about. Like, I have so many in jokes and things that I say or do, or but it's just for the satisfaction of myself and a small inner circle of friends, and it's totally worth it.
Right.
So
exactly.
I totally gotcha. And it's funny because Arrow, I mean, like you said, they kind of did Solomon Grundy like halfway through season two, and then they seem to be setting him up for the future, and then just never went there again.
They never did it.
They're like, they literally show him getting mutated, you know, and buried. And they never mention him again.
Yeah,
so way to go, Arrow.
Doesn't exist. He'll show up, I'm sure, on like Stargirl season two or whatever, and then that'll be the real Solomon Grundy, that kind of thing.
I guess my guess would be Legends. He seems like more Legends of Tomorrow character.
Legends? But, Legends season 10, when it gets to that point.
Yeah, when it gets to that point, when the only character left is Sarah Lance. But, yeah. But anyway, hey, Smallville.
Right.
So you are a big fan of Smallville and presumably Superman. I know you're a big Green Lantern fan. He's your number one guy. Right?
Yes. Hal Jordan is my favorite fictional character. I'm sure there are tons of people that disagree with that. That's totally fine. I get it. And that's kind of the unfortunate thing with doing like DC stuff is I'm the Green Lantern guy, right? So it's like, hey, get the Green Lantern guy on for the Green Lantern. Oh, wait. There is no Green Lantern episode of anything, you know, like none of these shows, they never have the budget. They never tackle those characters. So it's, you know, I'm never really able to be like, hey, get the Green Lantern guy on for this. But
the Green Lantern guy on. Yeah. But, if only Smallville had an episode called Lantern. It's so obvious.
Yeah. Right.
Know, he's like, is that kryptonite? No, it's something else. But, you know,
it is green.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I would say, well, you know, they have the movie in development, but literally Green Lantern came out the summer after Smallville ended, so there's really no excuse for him not to have shown up for 10 years. No excuse for him not showing up on Arrow either, but at least in the Arrowverse, that's been rectified. So I'm excited. I'm very excited to see John Diggle be the Green Lantern. John Diggle Stewart, however, whatever the fan theory come to life, and I loved it, and I literally cheered out loud when that happened in the Arrow series finale. So
yeah, I mean, luckily Digg's a good character, so you know, especially in the show when it's been going on for that long, if you're still in the nitty gritty of like, this never happened in the comic books, doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, John Diggle,
dude,
is
have
a
you
good
been
character.
Watching the Arrowverse?
Yeah.
You have to get over that by this point.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. So it's like, if that's a problem, you know, we can't help you. But luckily, Digg is a very good character. He's been there since season one. Very appropriate to take on that role. But luckily, to get, I guess, back on track, I am a Superman fan. I enjoy a lot of the DC Comics characters. There's a whole array of people that are really enjoying this universe. And Superman is definitely one of them. I've always enjoyed the Clark Kent stories. And, you know, there was definitely a chip on my shoulder at one point when people were like, man, Superman's not interesting. Because to me, that doesn't compute. But you know, that those arguments, that's kind of an uphill battle, because if you think Superman is boring because he's too powerful, then you're not reading Superman for the right reasons, in my opinion. So it's kind of like, yeah, you do you. But I do like Superman quite a bit. I will admit, though, Smallville was not always like my go-to Superman content. Like, I have to be honest, you know, it's one of those things where I was fairly young when the show was starting out back in the early 2000s. So, you know, I was told that I was watching a lot of it, and I do remember watching it as a kid.
I was told I watched it.
Which is a great memory being told. And then I know, I guess, like, in the later years of it, my biggest connection to Smallville was, like, on the website, and this is sort of taking it back even further, comicbookmovie.com, which is still around. They used to have, like, these, like, fight polls, and it was, like, a really odd Photoshop of, like, a poorly posed, like, Michael Chiklis, Ben Grimm versus, you know, the Rubber Doomsday from Smallville. If you've been on the site, you'll know what I'm talking about. It was like, you know, because those were the only characters at the time, so it was like Jonah Hex versus, you know,
Jonah Hex versus Halle Berry's Catwoman.
Halle Berry's Catwoman, yeah, exactly. It was that, and so I would often see, you know, they would show things like 2008 Iron Man versus Smallville Blue Beetle. And I was like, Smallville Blue Beetle? That's gross. Like, look at that's nothing. And I feel like I had a bit of a, what is, like, I didn't understand what Smallville was going for, because it wasn't comic accurate enough. But at the same time, when they tried to go comic accurate, I feel like they didn't have the proper reach to go all the way. And that was me as a younger, you know, teenager person. Luckily, nowadays, I feel like a lot of people, a lot of audiences are coming back to Smallville and really appreciating for what it is, which is a different take on the mythos. It's a more grounded take, especially compared to nowadays when everything you read online is multiverse theory this and big bad that and crossovers and big huge crisis finales. It's nice to go back to a story about a hero growing up, and I think that's what Smallville really has going for it, is just the it was different then, but now it's even more different somehow. It's managed to stay even more relevant in today's terms of superhero television. So I think that's really where a lot of my appreciation comes from, is looking back and going, hey, you know what? Smallville, you're different. And what you did was really good. You know, you weren't always 100% great, but I can appreciate that you were going for something kind of unique.
Well said. Well said. And I could not agree more. I mean, Smallville went through many phases, right? And if you expected one thing, understanding what the show was, and you tuned in at a different phase, you're like, "What is this?" You know, I can totally see that, because it did evolve into like DC Universe on TV, when, you know, the Green Arrow becomes a main character the last 3 years, and it's quite a journey. And I totally agree with what you're saying about how it has a unique flavor to it, and it was, you know, they did have some story arcs. Obviously, the overarching story arc was Clark becoming Superman, but there were like individual episodes, right, of like a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you just get so fatigued with, you know, like who the crossovers, the crisis, the big bad, the plot. Yeah, I 100% agree, and that's why it kind of fell off the Arrowverse, and I feel like many people have, because it just got so overwhelming. And like, I love these characters, but there's too many shows, there's too many stories. How am I going to catch up with this? And then you feel like you fall behind and you fall out of it. What a simpler time it was, and there was just one superhero show on TV, and it was Smallville, right?
Yeah, of course. If we don't want to sit here and be like, back in my day when there was only one Superman show, it's like, it's so great to have so many different options nowadays. I'm not complaining. You know, I love what the Marvel Universe is doing, and I like that the DC Universe is able to do different things. So if you like one thing, you can like it. If you like another, there's still other options. But it is still just sort of nice to look back and go, man, when this is the only tool that they had, they used it to their fullest. And I'll give them props for that.
Absolutely. And yeah, to your point also, because audiences seem to have embraced this multiple versions of everything now, you can accept something like Smallville more than maybe in the past. We're like, this isn't like the comics. So that's a factor as well. So,
yeah.
But hey, man, there's no Green Lantern episode of Smallville, as you said. So no. We can't call the Green Lantern guy, but we can't call the wrestling guy.
Hey,
I guess that's the in here for you, because in this episode, we have a couple of WWE guest stars. So season 6 of Smallville was like, hey, who can we cross over with from wrestling? And they of course got Batista, and Static, but they also got Kane and Ashley Massaro in this episode. So I know nothing of wrestling. This crossover, if you even want to call it that, it didn't have it. Like, oh wow, I got to tune in. How cool it is to see Kane fight Clark Kent. But to you, like, is this like a really cool, like, event? Like the closest thing I can compare it to is there's an episode of Star Trek Voyager that The Rock was on,
right?
And he fought 7 of 9, and I'm like, oh, Smallville did that. Okay, I understand what they're going for, but
yeah, of course, this was around the time that SmackDown was airing on the CW, and so I'm sure it was just sort of a cross promotion thing of like, we want to promote SmackDown, you know, we want to make sure that your viewers know that wrestling's on the CW. And so they obviously had Batista, and like you said, we've got two more wrestlers here, and then that was it. So I don't know if they weren't happy with it or if they felt like that was all they needed, but this is the end of the WWE crossovers in terms of Smallville. You can look in the future, and there are other wrestlers on other CW superhero shows. There's Arrow and Flash and all sorts of stuff. So if you want to check those out, go look up an Easter egg video. But in terms of this one, Kane is actually one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. He's, you know, known as the Big Red Machine, the Devil's favorite demon. In storyline, he is the brother of the Undertaker. He wears this cool red mask, and he's often booked as this sort of, like, you know, indestructible monster. He's definitely shown as a stronger guy, and, you know, I feel like this episode, we'll dig into it more, really plays on the fact that, like, this is a big, beefy, scary guy, and I think it handles it well. So, yeah, this was the episode that I felt like made the most sense for me, because I do really enjoy Kane as a wrestler, and yeah, as you said, there's not really many other options in that regard, so I'll try to get in while I can and see what happens.
Right. Yeah, now in the Smallville Official Companion, Season 6 by Craig Byrne, available wherever books are sold. Co-writer of this episode, Turi Meyer, had this to say about Kane. Quote, "It was a lot of fun to see Clark coming up against a guy that was a match and have real fisticuffs, a real fight." And then Al Septian, who co-wrote the episode as well, said about Kane, "He's great. He does what he has to do really well. Titan's just this brute of a guy that lives for the fight, and we couldn't have asked for anyone better to play him." And that's true. I mean, he serves his role here extremely well. And, you know, Batista, right, for his biggest star he became, he was like blinking and miss him and Static. Like, I feel like he was barely in that episode, but these guys are actually in this episode for quite a bit.
Yeah.
And actually have quite a confrontation, and it just makes me so disappointed. We'll get into the fight here as we talk about the episode, but it's like, when it came down the road, you know, Doomsday was just like a stunt guy, and Darkseid was Smoke, and then Lionel Luthor. I'm like, come on, y'all. Can we call up a wrestler and put him in some makeup and have Clark fight somebody? But anyway, that's a discussion for another time, I guess. But yeah. But for now, let's get into it. Combat.
Your friend down at Metropolis Precinct helped me find these. It's Titan's victims. They were all found between a crater outside of Omaha where I think he landed in Metropolis.
He left the same wound on all the bodies, and they're all fighters.
I know why. The tattoo on Titan's arm, from what I could tell, said he was a warrior, enhanced for combat. Ever since he's been here, he's been looking for a fight.
And what better challenge for a brawl-loving zoner than a rumble at a crypto fight club?
Combat is the 17th episode of Smallville's 6th season. It aired on March 22nd, 2007. It was written by Turi Meyer and Al Septian, and directed by James Marshall. So, this episode starts out, and Anthony, if I told you this actor playing the ring master here was Ethan Hawke, would you believe me?
I mean, if I didn't know, like, you know, Ethan Hawke was too big for Smallville, I'd be like, yeah, no, that makes sense. I could see it.
Like, this guy, total Ethan Hawke vibes. Like, I he must have been like patterned himself off Ethan Hawke. Obviously, it's not Ethan Hawke, but that's all I could think about watching this episode. It's actually an actor called Michael Eklund. And he appeared in Smallville a very brief moment in the season one episode Jitters. He's the janitor that Tony Todd kills accidentally when he comes to Luther Corp.
So
multiple time guest star is a different role. But I'm going to refer to him as Ethan Hawke throughout the episode because that's just what I think. So we have Ashley Massaro getting dressed very sensually, and someone is watching him, and again, very thirsty Smallville. These middle seasons of Smallville, they're like, hey guys, you know, check it out, right? But there is some funny dialogue here between her and the guy who's watching her. She says, "You're paid to keep an eye on the fights, not me." He's like, "The view's a lot better in here." But I'm like, God, this is just like the lowest common denominator pandering.
Very, very dirty. It's one hell of a way to start your episode. You're like, all right, let's tune in, watch some Smallville. And it's like, hey, I'm down here smoking a cigarette, watching this girl dress. And it's like, okay, Superman, where's he at?
Yeah. Oh, we need Superman to come save the day, right? But then we get a little exposition, and they're like, oh, yeah, the big guy's here. We found him out fighting some people out in Omaha. We're like, okay. But then stuff starts going to hell. Like, an alarm goes off, and the place is rocking, and they run out, and somebody's like, oh, they killed so-and-so. Oh, he's loose. It's Titan. And then, Ashley, Athena, who we learn her name is in this episode, she goes out to see what's going on, and we see two figures fighting in the darkness, and they're smoking. I gotta say, I think it's pretty artistically done, because, you know, that they're trying to hide who it is, but I mean, it's so like, of course we know who it is, right?
Yeah, of course. Realistically, yeah, we do know who it is, but I do agree. It was a nice sort of like, if you're not truly paying attention, I guess. It's like, oh, okay. It's a nice sort of opener to an episode, I would say. It's action-packed. It provides a little mystery. And I mean, it's a played-out trope, of course. And I will note that when we flash, I guess, back to it, there's a weird little detail there. But yeah, I thought it was, for what it was, well done.
Yeah, and the fact that they tease the end of the episode, I always wonder. We have a plus one on my tally board here for in media res, right? And whenever they do this, I wonder, like, did the episode run short and they just put this scene at the top to stretch it? I have no idea. But it is a good hook, right, for the episode. Yeah. And I added this to the tally board, and I thought Smallville did it more often. I guess it doesn't do it as often as I thought. We'll get to it at the tally board at the end, but it's only a plus one. But I suspect what you're mentioning is that it's 46 hours earlier, not 48. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm so glad you noticed that too. And I mean, it's such a, it doesn't matter ultimately, but like it says 46 hours earlier. And of course my brain is like, okay, 2 days. And then you pause and go, no, wait a minute. That's just two
Almost
hours.
2 days.
Like why? I don't, it seems like arbitrary to say 46 hours earlier.
17 hours earlier.
Yeah. It was just say 2 days. Come on, just say right. 2 days.
It's bizarre. But hey, that stuck out to both of us, I'm glad. And, you know, the last episode, Promise, which was with the wedding, and I remember watching that. This is, I think these two episodes back-to-back is what made me think, God, Smallville uses this trope way too often. Although Promise, it's not an in media res. They just show you the wedding day from Clark, Lex, and Lana's perspective, so it ends up not being that, but it feels like that. So these back-to-backs where it almost felt like that is what made me think, like, they do this too often. But anyway, we get Clark, and he's on the phone with Oliver Queen, Anthony. Oliver Queen is still present in this show through phone calls and stunt doubles and security cameras, isn't he?
Oh, wow. That's cool. It's like he's actually here.
You got to think that they were... I'm sure they thought, oh, we're going to get all them back for, like, the season finale. But they didn't. And so it's just kind of funny to see them, like, keep teasing Oliver Queen and what the Justice League is doing and the Green Arrow. But they never come back. Like, there's this tie-in, you know, comic book that showed you what they were doing. But it's funny throughout, you know, oh, Oliver gave me a tip. I'm like, all right, sure he did. And then we'll get to it at that point. But I had totally forgotten that there was security cam footage of some stunt double in a Green Arrow costume later on. So... But Clark's on the phone, and he got a tip from Oliver, and then Martha comes in, and I'd forgotten that I obviously forgotten a lot about this episode, obviously, but I'd forgotten that Clark was doing this, right? Martha comes in with a headline about how there's a good Samaritan doing citizens arrest and roughing up criminals, and right. and I'm like, wow, Clark, you're being productive, and he kind of calls himself out. He's like, well, it's a lot better than me just sitting around here. I'm like, that's what I thought he was doing these next 2 years, and I guess he was actually doing some stuff, huh?
No, he's at least doing it at least once, enough to cause a headline, so you can, yeah.
And Martha's like, hey, this isn't the way. And I'm like, no, Martha, don't stop him from doing this. This is a good thing.
He's out there proactively helping people. And I guess she's worried. She's a mom, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I see. But yeah, it is kind of funny to think about it on the outside of just, wait, no, hold on. Let him go do it. He's doing something. He's not just sitting around being sad.
Right, which is what he does most of the time in these couple seasons anyway. Mm-hmm. But in 6 and 7, at least. We cut from there to the Daily Planet, and Chloe is watching a crypto fight club.
Yes.
That's interesting because did you ever watch Birds of Prey, Anthony?
I mean, I didn't watch all the first season. I guess I didn't have that much time to watch
the only
13
season.
Episodes.
Yeah. There's an episode in it called Gladiatrix, and it's this exact plot.
Oh.
They call them metahumans back then. And it's people who, it's like this fight club, and it's like in a cage, and it has metahumans fight each other, and the two of the main characters get put in there and have to fight each other. I'm like, you get to season 6 of Smallville, and they start digging through the Birds of Prey tapes, apparently, for ideas, but that's where we are, so.
Yeah, it's a very odd presentation. Chloe says here in a second of like, oh yeah, we got this from Oliver, and he says that it costs more than
Oliver,
people make it a
Oliver
year.
Reference.
Yeah, another one.
Is it really that expensive? I mean, that's insane. Like, let's just throw out a number. $50,000 to watch a fight one night. Like, that's insanity.
The screen's so small, too. Like, it'd be one thing if you could at least make it a big screen, but they're sitting there watching it, because, like, the whole bit is that you've got this screen here, and it doesn't say, like, the name of, like, the fight or the promotion or the fighters or anything. It says, live or die, and, like, two arcade, like, PNGs on either side. And,
like, Are you supposed to click the live or die? Like, that was what I took from that.
Well, here's the problem with that is that it's okay. So, like, they're supposed to click live or die, right? And, like, whenever it gets to the point where, because we're seeing Kane and he's like beating this guy up,
guy with freeze powers, by the way. We see a little bit of freeze powers.
Is that what it was? Iceman. He just shot like a beam.
I don't know. It was a bluish haze. So I don't know what it was. I thought it was a freeze power, but...
Yeah, and so, like, you see, it gets to the point where it's like, vote now kind of thing. It's like the scene from episode one. Vote now! And you can see, like, the live or die is, like, it's sort of, like, pulsating to count the votes. And, spoiler alert, the guy gets voted to die, and Kane pulls out, like, he's got, like, a blade, and he kills the guy. But here's the thing I noticed. They didn't vote live. They just sat there and watched this happen. So technically, Chloe let this man die. She could have voted.
Oh, wow. That's a good point. Every vote counts, everybody. Yeah. Okay? So if you don't vote, you don't get to complain about the results. So there you go. Life lessons from Smallville. And I got to say, great camera work from that webcam. Am I right?
Absolutely. It's like
it's like that old control room. Down there. Like, I guess this was a thing, and I guess it still is a thing, but like these underground fight clubs and people watching on the black internet or whatever it's called, right? The dark internet, the dark web. Black internet, probably not a good term to use. So that's not what I meant. The dark web, I believe, just is the term web I was looking for. So yeah. So how topical. Some things in Smallville are so like early 2000s and I love it for that. But hey, they got a screen grab from this broadcast, and they see when Titan wins, he holds up his arm, and Clark sees it's a Kryptonian tattoo, huh?
Yeah, exactly. They were able to zoom in on that live broadcast, which, I mean, I guess if you paid as much as they did for it, apparently, for one fight, I guess I'd better be able to pause reality as well.
Right. I mean, I can't even take a screenshot off Hulu anymore. But these guys can take a screenshot off this. Oh, and not only is it a Kryptonian tattoo, Clark identifies it as a prison tattoo.
Yes.
So I guess because now the Phantom Zone has been equated to like jail and how people get tattoos on Earth.
Yeah, it's just like jail. So if that's why they're all buff and because they're always out there lifting weights and breaking rocks and all the things you see in cartoons. Like, yeah, of course.
Oh man, but. We go from here to a sonogram of baby Luther. So let me ask you this, Anthony. What's your take on the whole Lex and Lana and baby situation we have going on this season?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so this was kind of my thought during the whole episode, and we'll dig into it more as it happens. But from the pitch of this episode of, like, special guest star Kane has to fight Clark Kent. And so you're like, okay, cool. It'll be just like a kind of a throwaway filler episode where Superman's in a cage match with a wrestler. Kind of neat.
I didn't sign up for a cage match.
Well, that's a good point. Very similar sort of like tones of
the amazing Man of Steel.
That's what they should have called him. The human steel. So yes. Where was I going? Okay. Yeah. The baby. It feels very weird that in, like, this episode with the cage match, we have some very, very sort of, like, what's meant to be emotional, heartbreaking sort of, like, things that happen, especially when you get to the very end, which, once again, we'll get to. It's like, you can't just skip this episode. If you're just like, Superman fights a guy from the Phantom Zone, he's a wrestler, who cares? You kind of have to watch this one because there are dire things that happen to our main characters. And I thought that was very jarring, personally. And so I was a bit uncomfortable watching it. I mean, it was fine performed. It's not like it was necessarily bad. It's not like it was offensive. It was just like, wow, that's where you're going there in this episode in particular. All right, you do you, Smallville.
It's like they had their Lex and Lana plot, and like they plotted it out when things would happen in the season, and it's completely out of sync with whatever else is going on with the Clark plot.
Yeah.
Because you're right, these things do not matter. Like, if you're gonna do a fun wrestling episode, like, do something lighter or nothing at all with those other characters, right? I mean, I agree with you. It is a jarring whiplash when you go back and forth between what is going on with them, which is, you know, Lex Luthor machinations aside, having a baby and losing it, and like, that's some heavy real world stuff for people.
Yes, it
is. And then be like, and it's Kane. It's like, wow, okay. But yeah, so this is our first scene with them here, and we find out that Lana has canceled their honeymoon. Because, oh, we don't want to travel with the baby and all this. So it's been a week since the wedding. Smallville actually giving us some frame of reference here for, like, it's actually been 1 week. Lex even brings them some sparkling cider so it won't hurt the baby. Thanks, Lex. To celebrate their 1 week of marriage. And, you know, Lex is like, oh, it's fine. You know what? We have the rest of our lives. When the baby comes, it'll change things, right? And he's saying all this stuff. And you got to think, like, what was his plan? Like, but because ultimately the baby is not real. I guess he was thinking that, okay, well, this will seal the deal, so to speak, with her. And yeah, then the baby will be gone. And then Lex was a horrible person. Like, this is the season where he becomes the villain. I know people are like, when did he become evil? When he faked a woman's pregnancy to get her to marry him and then lied about it, like, the whole way through. That is when he became evil to me. And so, like, yes. Like, he's trying so hard. He's like, you know, we have the rest of our lives. I'm like, oh, God, Lex, come on, man.
I mean, it's all over this, all the Lex scenes in this episode. But, like, they go to the drink, and he waits for her to drink it, and then he takes his drink, and then, like, the music is really sinister. And there's a moment way down the line where he's having this sort of discussion with her. And it's very, very, like, very evil. Without it actually being outright evil. He's not being a cartoon about it, but, like, everything about this is, like, scary. It's like Lex is full-on Lex at this point. And I don't know. I don't think you have to be paying attention to every little detail. You just watch it, and, like, the big scary music is playing while he's with his wife and, you know, soon-to-be child. It's like, that's not happy music.
I gotta say, like, I disagree with all of this stuff. I don't think Lana and Lex should have gotten together. I think the pregnancy plot is dumb and borderline cliche, like, to add drama, right?
Yeah, it is.
But I gotta say, the scenes themselves, I've really been enjoying these Lex and Lana scenes. Like, they have some good scenes together because it's very unsettling, like, to, you know, and the music. And I gotta say, did you notice this? The music is, like, crescendoing here, right? Mm-hmm. This creepy music, and they're staring back and forth at each other. No one's saying anything. I feel uncomfortable. They feel uncomfortable. We all feel uncomfortable. But I don't know if, like, the editing is wrong in this episode, but it keeps going and going and going, and then it crescendos way after we already cut to the Talon for the next scene. And I'm like,
oh my God, dude, I totally noticed it as well. And it was one of those things where I was like, I don't know, am I overthinking it? Am I just, like, nitpicking to nitpick? But, like, it literally does. It does this moment where you have a close-up on Lex, and, like I said, he waits to take the drink, and it's really sinister, and he's like, oh my God, what's Lex gonna do? And then it cuts to, like, an American flag hanging outside of Smallville. And it's not, like, blowing or anything. It's just sort of, like, you know.
It is stock footage of the Talon we've seen 100 times.
Yeah, it's just, right? And like, the evil music is still playing. It is, like, it does feel like an editing mistake. Like, the music played over to the next scene when it should have been, like, you know, like that, and it doesn't.
Right. I'm so glad you noticed that too, because I do multimedia stuff for a living, so I'm always thinking, I'm always worried, like, oh no, did I edit that point wrong? Like, I felt like the intern exported this from the Final Cut Pro, and they didn't double check where the tracks got out of sync somewhere along the way, and nobody, like, it's too late, we can't fix it, just no one will care, you know, no one will be talking about this on a podcast in 15 years. It's not a big
tomorrow
deal.
We can't do anything.
Yeah. But it's yeah. So if you're watching this, there's nothing wrong with your DVD. Didn't skip your Hulu or whatever. Didn't lag. Genuinely, in this episode, we have two confirmations from two different sources from two different people. There's an issue here. But anyway,
sorry.
So glad you noticed that. But Chloe is just typing away at her computer doing some research, and the right when this stinger finally stops, we're back to normal music or no music, and Clark super speeds in and spills her coffee, which is you know, funny, and I guess that's what sets up her throwing away the picture.
Yes.
Of Titan that Lois, so that's the only reason this one time of all the times Clark shows up with super speed, he blows over a coffee. Also, does he, when he does this, does he blow through the door? This has always confused me. Like, outside I buy it, but not inside. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, Clark is a jerk in this episode, and it isn't properly addressed until the very end, in a touching scene, to be fair. But yeah, Clark is a jerk, and so it's supposed to show that, one, he doesn't care if he blows over coffee. I guess he's not controlling his speed. Maybe that's the me stretching and trying to fix this, but
find deeper levels to the episode. Very good.
But it does literally just have the setup of what happens next. So yeah, that's what I got from it. But I guess if you really wanted to dig in and do their work for them, it's because Clark is emotional.
Right. Listen, when you watch this show, you got to do a lot of work for them. You know, that's just how it is. And I love Smallville, but you guys know what I mean. So he's, by the way, plus one for blue shirt, red jacket, because he's wearing that as he does way too much, starting here all the way through season 8. They find out that, you know, he's mad at Chloe, like you said, like he's being a jerk. He's like, you didn't find anything out. And she's like, well, it's okay, Clark, hold on. And she finds out that the Ethan Hawke works for Belle Reve. And he is letting prisoners in and letting them out. And the person they saw die showed up in their cell dead the next day. So that is where this pipeline of meter freaks is coming, because they're all going to Belle Reve. Also, we got a plus one for episode title, set and episode. We got a plus one for Chloe's unseen connections, because Clark hands her some files from her source in the Petropolis precinct. I'm like, okay. So there's just going over the trail of bodies that Titan has left behind. Clark says the tattoo means warrior, so he's looking for a fight. And then suddenly Lois comes in, and I'm like, oh yeah, Lois is in this episode. So what do you think about Lois at this stage of Smallville?
I will say, in terms of this particular episode, I welcomed Lois as a moment to breathe. Because everything in this episode has been so serious so far, just because we've had, you know, Clark was pissed off with his mom earlier in the episode, and then, you know, he's mad here, and then we've got the baby stuff going on, and then in comes Erica Durance, and she's like, I couldn't find a chupacabra, and I'm going to lose my job.
Chupacabra. The chupacabra in the Everglades. I mean, Lois, listen, the chupacabra is in Puerto Rico and on the Texas-Mexican border. There's your first mistake. If you're looking for the skunk ache, maybe go down to Florida, right? But the chupacabra, no wonder you couldn't find it.
Yeah, she couldn't find it because she wasn't looking in the right place. But that's
wrong place.
You know.
Oh, man.
So Lois is a, I would say, in the very early stages, an acquired taste. I would say, especially in this moment, I enjoyed her for just bringing a little levity to the moment and the episode as a whole. So I appreciate that. She's not always exactly my favorite character, but she's enjoyable for the most part. And then when you get to the end of the show, she's great. So yeah, I like her.
I feel very similar to you. I think you calling her an acquired taste at this stage of the show was very accurate. At least it was to me. When we get to seasons 8, 9, and 10, the term I use is they finally let her become Lois Lane. You know, I'm like,
yes,
perfect. But all this stalling, and she's just played for comedy so often, and this episode like really like zeroes in on that. Although she does have some good moments and some good classic, like Lois and Clark show up at the same spot independently kind of thing. That's classic Lois and Clark stuff. So, yeah. So that's cool. But anyway, she shows up. She doesn't have a story. She's worried she's going to get fired from the Inquisitor. She wants to take Chloe's story because she sees with, it's like, is that a story over there? And they plus one for shut that laptop. This is a huge, this is a huge episode for the Tally Board, by the way. So Chloe shuts the laptop, and Clark and Chloe are acting all like, oh, I'm sure you'll think of something, Lois, but we're going to leave all this stuff here and leave you alone because we so you can dig through the trash and find the picture of Titan. So
to be fair, she doesn't dig through the laptop, you know, like she doesn't.
That's true. She looks, she gives it a glance, but she doesn't do it. So credit on Lois for that.
Goes for the trash.
Yeah. And she pulls out this picture and she sees FR-44. Fort Ryan 44, Fort name fill in the blank 44. She knows what it is because of her military history with her dad. I'm like, okay, I like that. I like how they gave her some inside knowledge based off her history. And if Clark and Chloe and Lois could all talk, they could all get to the bottom of this mystery together. But of course, they don't.
I did like that too. It was one of those moments of like, ah, I get it. That kind of thing. So it works. But you're right. If people, because they immediately blow her off, you know, like Clark, she walks in, he like immediately takes the files and he's like, I don't want her to see this. I don't want to talk to her.
Well, you know, they gotta protect this secret, right? They're like, oh, they're gonna get too close into this, find out some Kryptonian stuff. So I get it. If it were just meteor freaks, they might have involved her, but since the Kryptonian stuff were involved, that's off limits for other help, I guess.
Too much.
But Lois shows up at Fort Ryan 44 or Hangar 44, and another category we have called Lois's costume closet. So we got a plus one for that because she is wearing this kind of just vinyl red costume. Why did she wear this?
I was asking that question as well, because obviously I couldn't remember off the top of my head of like she had worn it before, if this was kind of something like her spy outfit, because that's what
it's her go-to.
Yeah, this is like her sleek sort of secret agent outfit, I guess, for like snooping, a bright red sort of leather getup. And I guess it was when you see pictures, I guess, online, and you're like thinking of watching this episode, you probably think like, oh, that's supposed to be her like, you know, wrestling outfit, because if you really look at like the what used to be called WWE Divas, only within like the last 5 years or so did they stop calling them Divas. But the Divas obviously had very scantily clad outfits, a lot of like leather-esque material. So I thought that was their way to evoke that feeling of watching a WWE product and, you know, seeing her in this tight sort of wrestling outfit. But she doesn't go there to wrestle. She goes there to snoop. So
right. I completely misremember this. I'm like, oh, yeah, she poses as a wrestler, tries to infiltrate the ring, right? No, that's mm-hmm. not what happens at all. She shows up. She says her car needs some gas, radiator or something. She talks to Athena and says she's a dancer at the Phoenix, and I'll let you come see my opening act. And I do a killer Stars and Stripes routine, which is a reference to season 5 back in Exposed. So that was fun. And apparently Athena is a lesbian, I assume. That's the vibe this scene was played for. So
lesbian, at least bi. It's one of those things where if it wasn't made in the time, you could probably say like, hey, that's kind of progressive in a sense, like willing to kind of do that kind of stuff. But because I know when it was made, I know it's more so just for like the sexual attraction of like, what if Lois Lane kissed a girl? You know,
exactly.
Takes away from that, and it's not gratuitous in the sense of like they do anything extreme. They don't really dive deep, but you can tell what they're going for, and it's kind of. But I guess it you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's very 2007. Look, we're doing something here. We're gonna leave it as ambiguous as possible, so no one will get offended, but no one will get too excited, and no promises. You know, so I was like, all right, guy, pick a lane. You know, stick to it. I respect it more. But anyway, so Lois starts snapping some pictures with this camera. I wouldn't use the flash if I were her.
That's exactly what my girlfriend said
to herself.
I watched this with my girlfriend, and she said, maybe don't have the flash on, because she gets the girl to leave, and then she starts just immediately like, click, 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 let me get photos of this place. And it's like, I mean, she's the spy wearing the bright red outfit, so I'm sure she knows all about stealth.
Well, and then I think they try to make us think it's pitch black in there, because Lois takes another picture, and she doesn't see Athena come back in front of her until she takes the picture. I'm like, she's literally 2 feet in front of you. How did you not see that?
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
So she gets caught, and it leads to a girl fight, and then she eventually gets knocked out, or at least kidnapped. That's just, she gets knocked out later.
Yes.
But and by the way, speaking of this outfit, in the companion, Erica Durant said this to say, quote, it was actually quite a comfortable outfit, and I just got a kick out of it. Shiny red leather. What other job, even in the acting world, can you say that one day you're in jeans and a tank top, and the next day you're in some strange red getup with boots? When they brought it out, I thought, this is so perfect. It's the hero colors, it's very cartoony, and it's just like stepping into a whole other environment. I got a good laugh out of it. So she enjoyed these costumes. So
fair enough then, you know? I like that. I got a kick out of it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Man. I hope you had a good day.
That's the right attitude. I love that as well. So let me come back to the Daily Planet. And actually, this is the scene where they find out that that Vince McMahon, as they call him, the meteor freaks, works at Belle Reve. So they can they figure out, you know, how people are getting in and out. And so Clark's going to go figure that out. He's going to go infiltrate the ring there, and Chloe's like, but he could kill you. I'm like, why do you think he could kill him? Like, we don't know what kind of alien this guy is. Like, he has a spike, so what?
He's big.
So we cut from there to Lex scene, right? And Lex is talking about keep me updated on your progress and all this stuff, and it's for a security guard character who actually he appears in a long string of episodes here at the end of the season. It's Bartlett, and he's in the rest of the episodes this season. And so good on this. I tell you what, the best continuity this show has when it comes to Lex security guards, Lex's doctors, and then doctors who work at the Smallville Hospital. But this actor looked familiar, and I was like, well, this is again. He's apparently in Saving Hope with Erica Durance. So hashtag it's all connected. So okay. Erica Durance and Hawkman. But you know, what do we see on this screen? We see Corto Maltese. Everybody loves referencing Corto Maltese because it's in The Dark Knight Returns. Of course, Batman 89 references it. We see that on Lex's screen. And again, another thing I had completely forgotten about, we see a stunt double in a Green Arrow costume shoot a security camera. It's amazing.
It's really him. It's really the Green Arrow. We got him for this episode.
Justin Hartley came in for this 5-second shot.
He got a kick out of it.
Oh, man. I appreciate them trying to keep the illusion that these characters and actors are still involved in the season. But when you know they never come back properly, at least in this, you know, they had no idea that Green Arrow would be regular in 2 years. But, right. You know, it's amusing. Also, we have a shut that laptop plus two because Lex shuts his laptop in disgust when Green Arrow shoots a security camera. So, but Lex goes to check on Lana. And she's having some trouble, isn't she, Anthony?
She's she's having trouble. What that trouble is and how it's going on, I'm not entirely sure. But boy, howdy, she's having a rough evening, I guess.
Oh man, because Lex goes to, I guess, check on her, and like she can't find her anywhere, and she's writhing around on the floor in the bathroom. She's like, "Lex, help!" And yeah, in universe. Not knowing what's going to happen, you're like, oh God, something's wrong with the baby. Perhaps from all these hospital visits she's had from being knocked out and all these things, right? But knowing what's going to happen, it's whatever drugs and stuff that they were faking the pregnancy with was wearing off, and I guess that's what put her in that condition, but
that's what
I don't
happened?
Know.
Okay.
I don't. What else happened? I have no idea. That's the only explanation we ever get, really.
See, here's the it's almost like you're supposed to connect it, but it makes no sense. Like I mentioned before, there's the scene where they drink the sparkling cider, and like she mm-hmm. drinks it, and Lex like looks at her for a good while, and you think like, did he poison it? What did he do?
And, oh, okay.
But obviously, there's such a long period of time. I can't imagine that you would buy poison that takes effects that late, in the cycle. But yeah, it was she takes that. That's unrelated, even though it's set up like a poison drink thing. And then, yeah, we just find her going, it's like, what? What? Hold on a second. What are you doing? You're just on the ground. Yeah. I don't know.
But Lex cradles her. He's like, somebody help me, which is a very pathetic place for Lex Luthor to be. I'm like, Lex, man, like, can't you, like, call security? Like, just to see Lex Luthor cradling her and, like, yelling through the hallway, that was kind of, like, unintentionally amusing to me. Maybe that makes me a bad person, but I found it somewhat amusing. But he just seems so helpless, you know? But anyway. Lex, she's passed out. You don't have to act anymore. You know exactly what's happening here. But anyway, we cut to Smallville Medical Center, hospital visit plus one, and Alana is in her favorite place in the hospital bed there, and she asks Lex, like, well, she wakes up and is like stumbling out of the bed, like,
yeah,
she's still messed up. Yeah, and Lex is outside talking to a doctor, and. She's like, where's Dr. Langston? He's like, oh, he didn't return my pages, so I called this doctor. And she's been my family doctor for years. And I was about to just do another rant about how Smallville has no continuity. But apparently I looked up this character and actress, Judith Maxine. She played this character in the second episode of season 5, Mortal. I have no memory of what scene she was in or what capacity, but good on you, Smallville, again with the continuity of the doctors, because this is like the Canadian actors who are hanging out in Vancouver that you hire on a regular basis, so you're forced to have continuity. So I was blown away when I found that out. I have no idea what she was in that episode, but she was. Right. But then Lex tells Lana that they lost the baby, and Lana's really upset, and Lex is upset. Or at least seems to be upset. And then he shares like a knowing look with the doctor, and she just kind of slowly closes the door and glides away. You're like, what's going on here, right?
Yeah.
But heavy stuff. I mean, we have two people who are presumably lost a baby in the episode of the WWE crossover. So I agree with you. It's Whiplash, you know?
It's very, very odd. And as we mentioned before, it's not like the scenes are performed poorly. It's quite good. It's quite emotional. Like, it gets exactly what it wants to across. I just don't know why you'd want to do that here. It's just, this is such a, and you know, it, not that the show is designed for this by any means, but obviously, as I mentioned before, I watched this episode with my girlfriend in preparation for this, and she is not super familiar with Smallville. She knows of it. She's seen episodes here and there. And, you know, the whole time she's like, why is Clark mad? You know, what's going on here? Why is it? I'm like, you can't really toss someone in this, because if you're trying to just watch a Superman action sort of like episode, as you assumed it would be, you're dealing with this, like, you're like smack dab in the middle of a plot involving Lana, you know, in her mind losing a child. And that, yeah, it's heavy. It's a bit much to handle. And yeah, I can't stop saying enough. It's well done, but maybe you should have considered where this was in place of this episode.
Right. And you're absolutely right. Christian Kirk plays all these emotions very well, I think. And, Rosenbaum, you're always like, what is he really thinking? Like, he always plays this. I mean, he's my favorite Lex. I think he does a fantastic job. And this is hard because clearly, like, the actors didn't know what was real, what his motivations were. So that's got to be really hard for him to be like, okay, am I really upset? Am I evil? Like, I don't have a plan here. So you're right. Everything is portrayed very well, I think, throughout this whole plot. So we go to the parking lot of Bell Rev, and Ethan Hawke is getting in his car. And then this is a really cool reveal of Clark in the reflection of the window, huh?
Yeah, I liked it.
And I don't know why he's still wearing the red and blue. I assume he changed into his, you know, red Kryptonite Clark costume when he went to the cage match. So why wouldn't he just do that now instead of wearing the clothes he wears all the time and make himself? Because he didn't know all these people were going to die. So why is he going to reveal his secret to these people, right? Because he's given the guy, I got to give it to Ethan Hawke here, because he has not given up about the Fight Club, because he's like, I want to, and Clark's put on this tough guy voice. Like, when I answer the phone, I'm like, hello? You know, that's what, that's what he's doing. I want to join your club. It's like serious, again, unintentionally funny. And he's trying to get Ethan Hawke to let him in his Fight Club, but he's really, he's getting thrown around, but he is not going to give it up. So he pulls out a gun and shoots Clark, and then Clark catches the bullet, and then he just goes into full, like, oh, we had a fight in you. Like, it's a really bizarre turn, isn't it?
Yeah, because he's given this sort of, like, shy nerd impression. Like, he's like, I'm a little bit busy, but if you're here to visit the administrations over there, like, he's doing that. He's trying to play it up like, I would never run a secret, you know, underground Fight Club. And it is quite a quick turn, because I did have the sort of mentality watching this is, once again, we'll reestablish at the end of the episode why Clark has been acting the way he is, and I have a bit of a not a rant, but a thing to talk about on that. Okay. But here he is just approaching this man, revealing himself, and it's you're right, he doesn't plan on killing him. He has no intentions of killing everybody that happens to see him use his superpowers. So it's just like, okay, I guess Clark is just completely comfortable letting this guy know that he can catch a bullet. And, you know, I did find it kind of funny that, cause, you know, usually with like a bullet thing, it's like a, you know, and it gets like flattened and it falls off his chest or whatever. But here he like caught it and then handed it back to him. And I thought that was funny of like, here you go, it still works. You know, like, that was the exchange instead. And he goes full goofy cartoon, and he loves him because he can catch bullets.
Well, even like, okay, he's going to go fight in this Fight Club, and it's going to be presumably broadcast on the internet, right? And he doesn't have any disguise. Like, okay, he's going to put on this leather. I assume he brought that. I don't think they gave it to him. But this whole, like I said, the Red Kryptonite Clark outfit. You know what would have been cool? If he had, like, sunglasses, right? And then he could be like, oh, the Clark Kid in the glasses, right? I don't know. That would have sold it better for me. Where at least it would have shown some effort on Clark's part not to just give away his entire identity to get this one zoner. You know? It's just, I don't know. But there's actually a deleted scene in this episode that it would take place here. between these next two scenes. And it's the lead scene where Clark shows up at the Fight Club, and he's like in the locker room. He's in his, you know, he's already in his red Kryptonite Clark outfit, Cal, I guess. I hate calling him that, but I've never liked that. But the show does it, so I'll just call him Cal. Right, he's in his Cal outfit, yep. And there's this super buff guy. Like this is like the buffest person. This is like Dr. Manhattan in human flesh, dude. So good on this actor. But he's like sculpted. It's like a Greek god. Right. And Clark's like talking to him about, hey, where's Titan? And he's like, oh, he's not here yet. He's, you know, but I'm going to fight him tonight. You're not. And Clark's like, no, I'm going to. He's like, no, I've worked hard to get up to this point. And if I defeat Titan, they let me free. And Clark's like, oh, okay. So that's how this whole thing works, right? But he's like, well, you're not fighting Titan tonight. I am, basically. And he's like, oh, who's going to stop me? You? And then we cut to Ethan Hawke and the other creep guy from the beginning of the episode walking down the hallway. And it's a deleted scene, right? So there's not actually any sound effects or special effects. But it's like the impression that there's like a fight going on and they hear it. And they go back in and they see human Dr. Manhattan. Like obviously, Clark had knocked him out. And Ethan Hawke asks Clark, like, what happened to him? And Clark says, nerves. And he's like, okay, well, come on then. Like, but it's kind of a silly scene, but it's kind of cool that it explains some stuff. And also it's the connective tissue between, like, you go from Clark talking to this guy in a parking lot in his normal clothes to fighting Lois, right, in the next scene. So,
yeah. And I guess they had to establish of, like, how did Clark Kent find this place? I get that they needed to establish that. And I guess people could call it sort of a tired trope or maybe lazy, but I can enjoy a comical scene of, like, you know, we cut from a scene of a big buff guy standing in front of Clark, and then we cut to another shot where all we hear is the scuffle, and we come back and the big muscle guy's down. It's like, that's classic, you know, it's a classic. Right. We don't have to shoot anything ridiculous. All we know is that Clark Kent took him out in a second because he's Clark Kent. And this big, huge, comically large man is out. Like, that's fine. It's okay. You know, it's okay to enjoy that kind of stuff. But yeah, I get it. They had to, once again, they're establishing the rage and the commitment, I guess, of Clark Kent and how he got here. And we didn't establish the change of clothes, but we established that.
It's the subtext of the episode is so rich and deep, Anthony. But this is when he does his Bruce Campbell from Spider-Man. He's like, how about Man of Steel? That's a name no one's going to forget. I have a way about this thing. People call me a psychic. I'm like, oh, why do we have to drop the Man of Steel thing now? Like, what a throwaway episode to, like, establish, or at least bring that up, you know?
So, yeah, or at least if there was an episode more dedicated to him being maybe like a fighter of some sort. You know, because it is, we've been comparing it a lot to the Bruce Campbell, you know, and that's a big moment, you know, the way that's presented in the film, Spider-Man 2002, is, you know, he gets the name of the Human Spider, and he's like, that sucks, and then we get the big reveal of the Amazing Spider-Man!
Like,
that's a big moment, right? And so, yeah, you're here, it's played as like a cute little reference, nothing more, it's the first time we have this name put upon him, and at the same time, it doesn't feel meaningful, and it's like you don't want it to be bashed over the head with it, but at the same time, if you're going to use it. So I do agree, it feels like a misuse in that term. It's strange. It's like, yeah, this guy who is not going to last much longer gives it to him.
He's the guy they call the Man of Steel. So once again, Clark, you know, he's here for Titan, but he's gonna fight Lois before, and I guess they thought Clark was just gonna annihilate Lois, because Lois is just a person, you know, and they know what Clark can do. But this is a classic, and this is as much as I was like, well, Lois and doing her silly stuff this episode, you know, I felt that way when she first showed up, but after she found the base and her sneaking in, like, I'm 100% on board with Lois here, because I like how this is a classic Lois and Clark thing. Like, they're both on a case, the same case, but they get to the same place different ways, you know, and they end up together. Like, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? And that's a classic thing you see in all mediums of these characters. So,
yeah, it felt very Lois and Clark, you know, her getting in over her head in that sort of situation. I did want to kind of bring up quickly, because obviously this is the wrestling themed episode. There yes. are some wrestling things here, which somehow tie to sort of modern day. Weirdly enough, and I guess this is set up because, one, it establishes that even though it's videotaped, there is no live audience, so Clark Kent doesn't have to worry about casualties of good people, potentially. And he sets up that there's like a huge sound system. We've got a sound system that will pump in a cheering crowd to give the feeling of having a live crowd there. And the reason I mention this is because over the last year across the pandemic of 2020 into 2021, wrestling, and this may shock people because it shocks me, but wrestling did not stop. Wrestling, for those of you who don't know, as far as the major sort of brands, is a weekly televised event, some with multiple shows a week. And they did not stop at all during the pandemic. Now, what they did is they stopped people from coming to live events. And as the year went on, you know, they started to open it up to a small percentage of audience members and all that kind of stuff. Even though, you know, there's people in the ring getting really close to each other. That's very questionable. But hey, it's their business, I guess. Not much we can do about it. But either way, wrestling has continued and they've developed ways to, you know, stream it to people. The WWE specifically has done this thing called the Thunderdome with this, you know, big spectacular name. And it's like a wall of screens, almost like, you know, in The Dark Knight, where he's got like the sonar screens. Yeah, yeah. It looks like that, except
beautiful,
it's a bunch
it?
Of, yeah, exactly. It looks like that, but it's a bunch of like FaceTime faces. Everyone's on like a big Zoom call. And then obviously they're not mic'd up. So you're watching these shows and it's sweetened with the crowd of just audio of cheering and booing. And it was funny watching that from this episode, which obviously came out years and years ago. But here we are today, and wrestling shows are using, you know, the exact same thing of just, you know, we need a moment where the good guy gets a cheer or whatever. That just play cheer audio. Screw it, you know, just do it.
Yeah, no, and it does work in universe, because it's like, oh yeah, it's a secret thing. We don't people knowing about this, right? If they don't pay, and that's smart tonight, because that was the problem with in the Birds of Prey episode. There was like a crowd, you know, there, and also it saves you on extras. Right, you don't have to get, yes, you know, 300 people in a crowd, and also it allows Clark and Titan to have a throwdown fight and destroy the entire environment and not worry about civilians. So
yeah, it's
set
up.
What a concept!
It works. It actually works.
It does. So you know, Lois and Clark get into this, and Lois is like, "Okay, hit me, but don't look like it. Like, look like you're trying, but don't actually do it." And Clark's like, "I'm not gonna hit you, Lois." And so she hits him, and of course, like, it should break her hand. She's like, "What you got under there? A steel girdle or something?" So I don't know if her hand's really broken or not, but that's got to hurt, right? But as she, like, stumbles away, he uses heat vision and destroys the broadcast equipment. So there'd be no camera. So I guess maybe that was always his plan, but I still think he should have disguised himself more. And somehow, during all this, Titan, who has shown up for his fight, which is later, he can come and go as he pleases, he recognizes these Kal-El. And I guess we could say he was one of those zoners around Clark. Like, well, actually, I guess he had to have been to be sucked out of the Phantom Zone. But that's how he recognizes Clark, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
From Zod, the episode. Sure. So, but he kills Ethan Hawke. He just throws him like 30 feet, and I guess he just dies from hitting the floor or something.
Yeah.
Because you see him throw him, and then like there's like a reveal of like his you pan around. It's like supposed to be this big moment. Oh no, they killed Ethan Hawke. I'm like, whatever, sure. And then we're back to the start of the episode, which is, you know, when we had that, you know, scene at the beginning. Which I don't know, man. Like in media res, usually there's like a better like bookend or loop around, but this was just the most random, arbitrary. Oh yeah, by the way, this conversation took place during this fight, you know. I guess it was just to get two wrestlers in here, right?
Yeah,
with her character.
I think that's pretty much, they just really wanted to kind of play up the fact that they had both of them. And mm-hmm. So you have and not to mention you get like multiple fights. I will say that is the thing, like you mentioned previously, the Batista episode. Batista barely in it, and it's like, you got this guy, you know, he didn't have a proper throwdown. This episode, you get multiple fights with multiple people, multiple characters, multiple wrestlers. Like, there is a pretty good amount of, especially for Smallville, very good amount of action, I would say.
Oh, especially for Smallville.
So
yeah, big time.
I'm happy with that, at least. I don't think anyone can come away from this and be like, oh, I don't know, I was kind of expecting a bit more. It's like, you're not watching the right show. This was pretty great for what it is.
It delivers on the premise of wrestlers on Smallville.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And yeah, so Athena here, she kind of sees the commotion and she runs away. And that's the last we see of Ashley Massaro. So were you familiar with her as a wrestler as well? Or
Not extremely. As you are aware, maybe some people are, unfortunately, a very sad story with her. There's a lot more to it than like immediately reading into it. Unfortunately, she did take her own life. And yeah, like I said, there's quite a bit under the surface of issues that she had while working with WWE and all sorts of stuff. So I mean, it's a very, very sad story, unfortunately. So it's interesting that, like, because I'm not going to say she was like the biggest star at this time. So it is kind of cool that she was able to be, you know, chosen for this role in this show, because she does a good job with it. And considering the material that she's given, you never feel, and this could be a problem with a lot of wrestlers. You know, wrestlers, obviously it's a performance, but they're not actors, at least not all of them. And so depending on who you get, it can feel like you're watching a wrestler, you know, and that can be difficult sometimes. But here, considering what she was given and what she had to do, in my opinion, it was in no way distracting. You know, it was not, it did not take me out of the viewing experience, be like, oh yeah, I bet she's like a stunt performer or a wrestler, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. Like, as great as Batista has become, I think he is really rough and static. He's like, nice try, Krypton Man. And I'm like, oh my gosh. But he's come a long way. But no, I agree. I would not have, if she was just in this episode, I'm like, oh, they cast like a really fit actress, right? Or, yeah, you know, to play this role. I didn't think like, oh, here's a wrestler. Like, even Kane, like, he's all right. He does what he needs to do, right? But for sure, for Ashley though, she pulled it off very well.
Yeah.
And some good scenes with Lois. But yeah, so this leads us to a knockout to keep Clark secret, because you know, Titan and Clark start fighting. Clark tells Lois to run because he wants to get her out of there. Also, you know, can't reveal my secret. And she, and you know, very Lois thing, even though this is a Hulk of a I would say a human being, but a Hulk of a creature, she jumps on him and starts beating on him, like, to try and help Clark, and I love that. But then she gets thrown across the ring and gets knocked out. So there's our plus one to keep Clark's secret. So now that she's gone, we can have our throwdown fight. And I gotta say, this is a really good fight. Is it Smallville's best fight? I don't know, but it's up there, because it lasts a long time. We see a lot of blows, a lot of setups, a lot of destruction around, and we even get some really cool, like, slow-mo shots of the uppercut punch, right? The move from Clark. Like, there was some great stuff in here. And speaking of Spider-Man, like the 2002 Spider-Man, like when Titan pulls out his spike to, like, hit Clark and he catches it, I thought of Spider-Man with the glider, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, it's a good action, of course, sequence. It's got a lot of interesting stuff in it.
Yeah, and then of course, much like the Green Goblin, he's impaled by his own by his own glider. He died by his own hand, right?
Yeah, so he gets the you know, right in the chest. Clark Kent does give what is, I mean, it's not exactly, but you could compare it to what's known as a Superman punch, which is one of the moves that's used by Roman Reigns in the WWE. So, you know, for that's kind of one of those things I'm sure you'll hear on, like, you know, Easter egg or wrestling kind of videos, where it's like, oh, if you look here, Clark Kent gets in a patented Superman punch on, you know, the big red machine Kane, and it's like, oh yeah, even though they weren't doing that intentionally, it's there.
And you know, Clark is really enjoying this. Like, there's some shots of him smiling, and he's getting his, you know, this, like we were saying, we're kind of joking about the subtext of Clark being angry, but for real, I mean, he's working through some frustration, because, you know, he just saw the love of his life marry his ex-best friend, future arch nemesis, last week. So he's in a bad mood. You know, we've all been there. So you know, he's working out his frustrations and enjoying the fight, you know, and they're pretty bloody, and I like that this is a physical fight on Smallville that lasts a long time. And gosh, I can't even, like, Clark fights Bizarro. That's a pretty good fight in season 7. But after that, man, you know, it's really the Zod fight, Clark and Zod in season 9 finale, which is anywhere near anything like this. And it's still much shorter in a much smaller location. Because season 6, you know, they still had more of a budget than having later seasons. But man, like you know what? For an episode that was billed, as we've been saying, Clark Kent fights WWE wrestlers, they delivered. And that was essential to make this episode work. So yeah, good on them.
Absolutely.
And Clark does get in a my turn. And of course, I thought about Ben Affleck from Zack Snyder's Justice League. That's the only thing I think in the terms of internet memes now. So, oh, and you know what? I do like, before Titan died, he was like, good fight. And he died. I'm like, you know what? I like that. That fits his warrior mentality. So there was a little bit of character there. Like, even though he lost, he enjoyed it. It was a good fight. So they did, you know, really tie everything together pretty well, I think, as far as what they were going for. So
yeah, it's a nice tidbit. It does make me kind of wish we had a bit more of, like, you know, like, oh, I bet you want to be angry and do this. Like, you probably hate that guy. And he's like, I just want to fight. Like, this guy's a good, like, that's maybe established that's why he came out, you know, maybe give him a bit more dialogue. But I understand, you know, they're like, ah, let's not write too much dialogue for the WWE wrestler. Let's just, you know, give it to him. But it's a nice tidbit. It's a nice little extra, I would say.
Right. And in co-writer of the episode, Al Septien had this to say about the ending of the fight in the companion, quote, he punches him and Titan dies on his own spike. We made sure of that. Clark feels like he did it. He went in there to do it, but in actuality, it's Titan's own weapon that kills him. It's an accident within the fight. So that was their, like, Superman doesn't kill stance. And Smallville even follows this through, like, in season 7, and one of the many times he kills Brainiac, Brainiac's like, you can't kill me. And Clark's like, you're not a man, you're a machine. And he kills him. I'm like, good on you, Clark. So do you... This is like, you know, the hot button topic of the decade, right? But do you have a hard stance on should Superman kill or not kill, Anthony?
I mean, it's all circumstantial. I would say that there are definitely scenarios in which, because I don't want to get, if you follow me online, you'll know that I'm not exactly like a big supporter of the DCEU, you know, like I like Shazam,
Shazam is one of my favorites as well. Yeah.
Shazam was a blast. I said that Wonder Woman 84 was the best Superman 3 remake I had seen that year. So that is what it is. But like, I totally get the emotion that is the intent behind the Man of Steel sequence of Zod. You know, like, they set it up. They had the whole dialogue of, you know, I'll just go through everybody. You know, if you don't stop me, I'm going to keep doing it. And they hammer that home. So, like, I get it. It's just that, you know, I feel, and myself and many others feel like it could have been executed better. The intention is there, and I get it. The execution is what feels a little bit like, maybe you could have done this, maybe you could have done that, yada, yada, yada. So, I mean, I don't think that any superhero is like 100%, no matter the situation, they can't kill. But it has to be done well. It has to be very specific. It has to have thought behind it. And this is jumping ahead a bit, but we learned that Clark went into this scenario almost with the intention. He's like, I was so angry that I felt like I could kill him. And I feel like the conversation that is had between him and Martha really does it the best way that could. But in terms of like the grand scope, I would say, I don't like the idea that if Superman can't be with who he loves, he feels like he could kill someone. That is where that comes in. And it's like, I see what you're going for. I get it. And it's like, the emotions are there and yada, yada, yada.
Well, that's established across all mediums, right? You look at the nightmare sequence. Yeah. He lost Lois Lane. He went crazy. Injustice, right? That's very popular in these days. The evil Superman trope, right? He loses Lois Lane, and then Now, I like to point to Kingdom Come by, you know, Alex Ross and Mark Waid. When Lois Lane dies, he becomes a pacifist, right? And
yeah, he gives up. You know, he loses his sort of like the flame in him to sort of continue on with anything because he lost something, so he doesn't feel that fight anymore. I feel like that's a much more appropriate use of it. I'm not here to sort of debate any sort of Snyder sort of decisions and obviously that kind of stuff. But it does feel very weird to me that like I had that sort of callback, or I guess in this case, call forward, that it's like, oh my goodness, anytime Clark feels like he can't have the woman that he wants, he has this anger inside of him that could potentially kill someone. And it's like, that's not exactly my Superman, but... As I mentioned, he has a nice chat with Martha, and they bring it down to human terms, which is what the show's all about. And it not exactly the best, but it makes it work a bit better for me.
Yeah, no, it's a good way of looking at it. And you know, I guess in between there, we have Lex's plot, or one of Lex's plots tying together with this one. His security guard, Bartlett, he sent to find Titan. That was what the mission he went on. But when they found the Fight Club, everybody was dead, but they did recover the body of Titan. And it's like, you'll find his autopsy was very interesting. It's like, he wasn't a crypto freak. No, he wasn't even human. So Lex will use that, no doubt, for his evil experiments moving forward. If I were Clark, I might have taken the body just so the government or whoever couldn't just dissect the body, right? But clean up your mess, Clark, is basically my point. So, but Then we have our next scene, the one we've been talking about, with Clark and Martha, and Clark's looking through his pictures. He's like, oh, I thought Titan was the last Phantom Zone. I'm like, why would you think that? Like, did you lose track? Like, the Phantoms, this episode at least does pick up the Phantom Zoner plot, which they had forgotten about for several episodes. It was such a heavy thing. When the first two or three episodes of the season was a new Phantom Zoner he was running into every week, right? And then he just goes, you know, weeks without running into them.
Is that why he assumed that they were gone? Is like, I haven't seen anybody in like a month. I guess I beat them all.
I guess that's it, right? We get some exposition here that, oh, Lois got her story and she's going to write her article about the Fight Club. I would love to see how he explained why he was there to her and all that stuff, but that gets expositioned away. And he does discuss the kill or no kill situation with Martha. And yeah, I mean, you've already said it best. Like, that's a very disturbing thought now that I think about it. Like, I get being angry in the press that, again, love of his life, married his ex-best friend, who's his future arch nemesis, but that should not push anyone, much less Superman, the person of that moral core, to kill. So,
yeah, that's where it reaches into a point where I'm not super comfortable with, but I do want, it's the intention. I get that they were trying to show that Clark's in an emotional state. This is a show on the CW. Even though Clark's not a teenager anymore, most of the audience is going to be that teenager age, and they can relate to feeling like their world is over whenever they can't be with who they love. And so it's like, I get it. I get that Clark is feeling like he can never find happiness now that, as you said, his future arch nemesis is with his, you know, his first love. Not a good mix, but the implications and the execution of, I felt like I wanted to kill him. But they bring it back. They say, you know what? I couldn't. And Martha says, like, you know, that's what the difference between you and Titan, you know, you didn't do it. You know, he would have slaughtered you and Lois and not even thought about it. So there's something behind it. It kept the humanity of Clark Kent, which I liked.
Yeah, I think they handled it as succinctly as they could, especially in the Smallville format. And they continued to have this his grappling with that question as the series continues. And I did respect that, as well as, you know, do you think he was so hard on Titan because he looked like Lex because he was bald?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, he saw him and he was like, that guy looks just like Lex. Just like him, eyes and all. And it's like, it's crazy.
It probably helps, you know, his motivation. But you know, here at the end, you know, Martha tries to tell Clark, like, hey, she made her choice. And Clark's like, no, maybe somebody made it for her. I got to save her from this. And Martha's like, no, Clark, you just got to learn to move on, right? And she's sending mixed signals. She had told Clark to move on a few episodes ago. And then in the last episode, the wedding episode, she was like, well, you know, me and your father almost didn't get married, but, you know, we took a last chance and we did it. So maybe if you and Lana feel, you should look. I'm like, Martha, pick a lane. You know, this guy is conflicted. You know, I understand that they want to, like, they use what she says to him to kind of, you know, inspire him to do this or that. But, like, from week to week, like, come on, some form of consistency would be appreciated here, you know?
Right.
But anyway. We're going to get to the... you know, ultimately, all those arguments are undercut because Clark is right. The reason Lana married Lex because of Lionel. But, you know, we'll get there as the season progresses. But we're back to the creepy nursery that we set up a few episodes ago. And we get a Nell reference. Continuity points, right? Aunt Nell. Maybe they remembered she existed because she actually did come back in the last episode. So good on you. Henry Small didn't call, though, her biological father, but he's long gone. Didn't even go to her wedding. Lana is just in like a state of emotional shutdown right now. And she's like, I called about Dr. Langston. He was killed in a car accident. And Lex, who of course killed him himself in the last episode, was like, oh, that's terrible. When did that happen? She's like, the day of our wedding. Why does all these horrible things keep happening? And like, you want to say, Lana, I don't know. What did Lana do this to herself by getting into this situation? Because people tried to warn her about Lex. I don't know, like, but you feel sorry for her because she has been 100% manipulated by Lex, and he is just feeding her this BS, like, you have to just let go and give it up to a higher power. I'm like, shut up, Lex, man, you orchestrated this whole thing.
Well, Lex is, in that scene, and maybe this is, once again, me digging, and I hope people hear this and go like, oh my god, this guy has an answer for everything, but Lex is talking about himself. He says to her, he's like, there's some things you can't control and you have to let it go. They have to be taken care of by a higher power. But who's pulling the strings right now? It's him. He's the higher power. He yes. is God. Like, he is the one who's absolutely 100% in control. He's manipulating this poor woman. He is getting everything that he wants. And it's all quiet. It's all methodical. He's not a cartoon. And it's like, this is, as we talked about earlier, like, Lex is evil. This is Lex Luthor. He's talking about how he is the one in control. He is like, mm-hmm. there's things you can't control. Let me take care of it. It's like, ooh, that's evil. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we were saying, like, we might not like what's going on, but we like the way that it's realized, you know, because that's Lex yeah. Luthor with the God complex. Like, absolutely. That's him. So, and all these things are why Rosenbaum is the best Lex Luthor, even in these plot lines, which I wish they never would have done, you know. He comes through in that. So absolutely. And you can even tell, like, he's trying to hold her hand and she's just limp and she's just like, you know, she is shut down from this. So hey, Lex, I think this plan of yours is backfiring.
Maybe just a little.
Yeah. So then we cut to Lex in the by the fireplace, and he's on the phone with his family doctor, who, to the show's credit, was apparently established the previous season. So good on you, show. But he confirms that he's like, are these all the files? Because Lana had been like, I need to get the files from Dr. Langston and find out what happened. He's like, of course, we'll get those. Well, Lex got them all right. And then he throws them in the fireplace, you know. And not only does he throw them in the fireplace, he also throws the sonogram of the baby in the fireplace. And then it burns. And then you see this awesome, like, you know, talking about Lex being evil, right? Through the flames, right? Of the reverse shot through the fireplace. And he sheds a tear. And you're like, why? Because they don't flat out establish yet. And this, I mean, it comes out right as the show progresses. But they don't establish that he faked the pregnancy. So you know something weird's been going on. So it's all still ambiguous enough, but it still works. And you know, even he has some remorse about who knows. You can read so much into that. But that's why I love him as Lex Luthor. So
yeah, I agree. There's definitely some stuff that you can take into that. You can, I mean, if you want to go really far out in sci-fi, it's like, did he take, like, the fetus? What did he do? Like, was there ever a baby? Is he sad about the baby? Like, yeah, there's a definitely, without knowing where it's going, you can make a whole lot of assumptions about it. And it's played just enough. He doesn't break down and start crying. It's not like he's covering his face and it's a nice sort of, like, pan out on a sad Lex by the fireplace. Like, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. it's cold. It's still, and he's, you know, emotional, but we don't know how, we don't know what, and maybe it's just the last bit of his humanity breaking through that exterior. Who knows? But it's done well.
And we get more of the creepy music, but at least this time they seem to fade it out correctly. So
it doesn't play through the next episode you're watching. Yeah.
That's the one thing I'll take away from this episode forever, that production stake there.
I thought the Titan was the last prisoner I let escape from the Phantom Zone. But looking at all of these.
If there are any more out there, I'm sure you'll find them.
And then what? I don't know how to return them to the Phantom Zone. The only way to get rid of them is to kill them like I did Titan.
Clark. From what you told me, that was an accident.
That's what I keep telling myself.
Well, what if it wasn't? He would have killed you.
So I just killed him first? How does that make me any different than Titan?
What you're feeling right now is what makes you different. Regret, remorse for a vicious creature who would have murdered you and Lois without a second thought? Those feelings are what make you human, no matter how much you deny it.
And what about the anger? I wanted to kill him, Mom. I wanted to kill him with my bare hands. I never felt rage like that before.
You were angry before you ever heard of Titan. We both know that's not what this is about.
How could Lana do it? How could she marry Lex?
No, Clark, but she made her choice.
Or someone made it for her. I have to figure out what happened. I gotta do something.
Honey, I understand how much this hurts. But part of being human, of being in love, is learning to let go. If you can't, I'm afraid the anger you're feeling will always be there.
Combat got an 8.3 out of 10 on IMDb, and Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 1.5 out of 5. So he is back to not enjoying Smallville.
I mean, I understand it. I get it.
So I ask you, Anthony, on the letter grade scale, what would you give Combat?
You know, I've been floating around a certain number here because I have to take into account the general grading that is done on this show. You know, there's various forms of grading, but at the end of the day, I would personally, maybe it's a bit of a bias, I don't know, B minus. I would say that this episode is not bad by any means. It is not to the point where, obviously, we sat here and joked for like an hour and a half about the episode. And,
right.
But like, that's every episode of Smallville, so don't get mad at me about that. I feel like watching it while watching the episode, there was never a point where I was like super confused to the point where I wasn't enjoying it. Like, everything overall was handled in a very straightforward manner. Things got wrapped up. The actors were good. They read their lines right. Everything was perfectly fine and average. Now, if you're saying average, why not give it a C? And that's where it comes into the fact of, like, realistically, C is average. But in terms of, like, generally people give, like, A through Cs and then failing is everything below. B is technically kind of the middle ground. So I would say a B minus. There's weird sort of tonal stuff in there. But as we mentioned before, this has one of the best fight scenes of Smallville. So if you're going in there for the action, at least there is some quality action for you. There's some good Lois Lane stuff in here, which is rare for this time of Smallville. There's emotion, there's drama, there's, you know, they don't go too overboard on the special effects. There's like one or two shots that look really wonky, but
well, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because the shot where Clark, like, obviously yeah. green screen Tom Welling goes to the camera, they use it twice, Anthony.
They use it
in the beginning and at the end. I'm like, no. Don't use your worst special effect in the show twice.
It looks really, it's like someone took an image of Clark Kent and like threw it at the screen. It's very funny. I'd recommend watching. It's in the opening, and then like you said, they reuse it again when it's sort of like, and now we're caught up. So I'd say check that part out. That's where the minus comes from, is that one shot.
Oh, well, it's funny. I actually also am giving it a B minus. I mean, you said it very well. There's a lot of great stuff in here. You know, overall, the concept is kind of wonky, you know, with like a crypto freak fight club. Some of the performances of Ethan Hawke really was just over the top, but we enjoyable. Like, again, enjoyable.
Yes.
Ultimately, and that's what this is all about, right? So, yeah, it's not one of the greatest episodes, but as we said, it has one of the greatest fights. And I think the straightforwardness of it is also a great point that you made as well. So, at the end of the day, B minus for both of us. Let's go to the tally board. Well, fasten your seatbelts, friends, because there's quite a few updates to the tally board in this episode.
Oh, boy.
Okay, we have a +1 for Blue Shirt, Red Jacket. That brings us to 54. We have a +1 for Chloe's Unseen Connections. That brings us to 27. We have a +1 for episode title set and episode. That brings us to 47. We have a +1 for hospital visits. That brings us to 101. We have a +1 for in media res. That brings us to 4. We have a +1 for knockout to keep Clark secret. That brings us to 37. We have a +1 for Lois's costume closet. That brings us to 4. And finally, we have a +2 for shut that laptop. That brings us to 25. Whew. And then finally, Bechdel test pass, because that scene between Lois and Athena. So good on you, Smallville.
Yes. You can say whatever you want about the context of the scene. but, you know, they're not talking about a man. Her father comes up in conversation, but it's not about her father. It is mm-hmm. two women having a conversation, one trying to deceive the other. And I thought that was one of my thoughts. As soon as that scene ended, I was like, I guess that counts. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Cool.
It is amusing back and forth where, you know, Lois tries to act like she's a stripper and then tells Athena, like, oh, yeah, my daddy was a general. It's like, oh, I bet he's proud of you. And then at the end, she's like, she is proud of me. So that was a good back and forth there. So ultimately an enjoyable episode of Smallville and with a lot of tally board moments there and with crucial plot information. For the
this
rest
is the
of
episode of Smallville
season.
To watch. Like this, yeah. Apparently, you know, as much as we talked about it, it's got everything. Everything you'd want from Smallville. It's in this episode.
If you had one episode of Smallville to show people, make this the one. No, please don't. But, Anthony, a lot of fun finally talking to you, man. I know we've listened to each other over the years, so great to finally connect on this one. If people want to find you out there on the internet, where can they find you?
Well, I'm on Instagram and Twitter, at Anthony Lantern. I mainly post a lot of, like, toy-related content. My YouTube channel is pretty much dedicated to, like, action figure and toy reviews and collection discussions and things like that. So if you'd want to check me out on YouTube, it's Anthony Reviews, where Anthony Reviews. But, you know, I don't tweet too much. I'm not going to clog up your timeline or anything, so that should be fine. I also am featured quite a bit still on the Shades of Night Kirk Beattie channel. We've been doing sort of commentary reaction videos to various films. We did the Generation X TV X-Men movie, which was a lot of
fun. Oh, wow. Okay, I've never seen that, but one day, it's on my to-watch list. So.
It's something. But yeah, that we reacted to that. We've reacted to a couple of like holiday-specific films, and at the time of this recording, it should be coming out soon alongside the highly anticipated Snyder Cuts. We have a video coming out where we reacted to the TV Justice League movie from the late 90s.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'd say look out for that if you're interested.
Awesome. Good stuff. And you guys have been putting out good stuff for years. So everybody go check them out.
Thank you.
As for me, Moron Zach on Twitter, MoreOnZach. I'm also the host of my podcast, Franchise Fatigue, where we talk about movies, remakes, reboots, and when franchises get fatigued. You can find us on Twitter at Franchise Fatigue at the UFP Earth Twitter account for that United Federation of Podcasts. And for the podcast here, you can find us at Always Smallville with one S on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville. And you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with one S. Well, we'll be back next time talking about Linda Carter coming to Smallville as Chloe's mom and Progeny. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Always Hold On to Smallville is brought to you by listeners like you. Chris Fuchs, Cavante Chillis, Dallas Hernandez, Casey Cochran, Darren Kirsch, Joey Deanberg, JJ Hodges, DJ DeWinna, Jason Skipper, Nathan Rothacher, Mateo Jarrell Santiago, Nathan McKenzie, Tim Miller, Joe Mikindo, Steve Rogers, Molly Ficarella, Atif Sheik, John Curcio, Mike Franz, Dylan D'Antonio, Mariana Sachi, Andrew Parker, James Lee, Jonathan England, Adam Sullins, Joe Michael, Mark Idzfoppen, Alex Ramsey, Jason Davis, Patrick Bravo, Corey Moore, James Bandini II, Nick Ryan Magnoza, Eddie Bissell, Jim Thomas, Nicholas Fansler, Catherine Caldwell, Will Hunt, Clunk Kent, T. Hamill, Alana Gibbs, Patricia Carrillo, Omar, Tom Gerke, Nicholas Coso, Erica Flynn, Jared Gibbs, Anthony Anderson, Jasmine McGilly, Keith Falls, Jay Packett, Cody Thomas, Lauren D., and Alvin Norland. Thank you so much to all these patrons. And you too can become a patron by going to patreon.com/alwaysmallville with one S. Hope to see you there.